Apologies, ladies and gentlemen, for that brief and not particularly scheduled break, but it became essential. Now, can we then return to the submissions that we were hearing addressing items B through to E?
Yes, Merlin Jackson here. I think we, as I said, we kind of rolled the agenda items into one.
Yep.
And we'll just carry on from there. So I think looking at access to ground, and obviously a big concern has always been the loss of ground, the additional loss of ground, and it's something that comes up at every fisherman's meeting. But we would start on a positive here again. In the statement of common ground, the applicant has agreed that the fishermen listed in the statement will be given access to passage and fish the site during construction. I think that's going to be down to liaison and good liaison if the safety zones are observed. So in the early stages, potentially the drifters can still work in the southeast if the northwest is being constructed and so on. So that's a benefit. Within that, I think we've mentioned suckerfish already. Suckerfish was a difficult decision for the TFA vessels, as it potentially could always work for them or against them. Vattenfall has paid for that initially and helped us with that, and the Fishermen's Association has picked up the costs since that initial outlay. We've had a lot of teething problems with it, but like all good data sources, it is completely reliant upon interpretation. And that's got to be in conjunction with the vessels who are actually producing that data. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons we mentioned that is there are a number of references with suckerfish in the technical paper, which we have entered opinions on. Part of that is the suggestion that suckerfish shows that the site is far more a transit area than a fishing area. And if you pick your moment, then yes, on certain days, we agree it does. But I think we don't want that statement to detract from the fact that it's a heavily used fishing area. Mm. So it's something that these two vessels in particular will say, we'll talk about in their individual presentations. Absolutely. Yeah. Suckerfish has also obviously been used to look at the range of these vessels. And I know that in the, this is maybe a point to talk a little bit about their range. In the written representations, responses to written representations, made by the applicant, there is reference to TFA stating its vessels have a range of 20 to 25 miles and that its vessels could work as far as Dungeness, West Mersey and the French coast. Mm-hmm. TFA still maintains the range is correct. Should wear my glasses. Although probably not agree with the Ramsgate vessels and the French coast particularly. But the frequency with which that range is used is not considered in that statement effectively. Bearing in mind these vessels are generally between 8 and 10 metres, in reality these fishermen, whilst they are capable of using that range, will always use the closest available grounds first.
Essentially, that was a point I just wanted to test, that you are saying that the great majority of the vessels will, although theoretically capable of that, practical considerations, weather considerations, comfort and safety considerations will mean that you will often be fishing close to home.
Yeah, 100%, and economical. Mm. I mean, you would far rather burn 10 miles worth of fuel than steam 25. Mm. So there are multiple factors about that range. To give you an example, the suckerfish data for the Defiant, which is Graham Pullman at the end here, I think he has 59 days on suckerfish for the recorded period, which is in the technical report. And out of those 59 days, that vessel fished three times at Folkestone, which is about 20 miles from the harbour. But the remainder of those days, she stayed within 11 to 12 miles of the harbour. Economically more viable, if the fish is there, you're always going to fish there. So whilst range is a factor, and it's something that is important to these boats to be able to do that, there is not perhaps the opportunity to go and investigate fishing down towards Dungeness as an easy option. We would also mention vessel adaptability, which comes up a lot as well in the ES. and what that actually means. At 9.17.6 in the ES, in the fisheries chapter, it states that most of the local UK fleet are able to operate multiple gear types, allowing flexibility in the target species and also efficiency under monthly quota allowances. The majority of this activity is concentrated within the 12 nautical mile limit, thus avoiding interaction with large Dutch beam trawlers. To an extent, there is some truth in that, but for clarity, being adaptable and using more than one gear type, it is not a coverall that means that you can just switch from one method to another, and it's not mitigation. Most adaptations or method changes are forced by other factors, quota, economy, lack of available species. If you do have 300 pots at sea, you don't switch to being a trawlerman the following week. Some vessels are using two types of pots at once. Some can use nets on particular tides and switch. But there are numerous constraints for the amount of gear that can be worked, and the costs and the realities of whether methods are working well, species are available, grounds available, etc. So adaptability is recognised, and it is how these fishermen survive, but it's not a simple, straightforward choice.
It's a product of necessity, you might
say. Absolutely right. And it's not... It's perhaps out of context to say that these vessels are adaptable, therefore the impact is less. Mm. And I think that's something that's come out of the fishermen's meetings very much, is that adaptability is fine if you're not being forced to adapt. So it reflects in the impact levels and the concern over the impact levels that have been arrived at.
So to be clear here, then your position would be that the ES has not sufficiently evaluated the nature of the impact and has not accorded it sufficiently high weight.
Yes. So we'll land for both of those things. If we can, we've looked at table 9.14 in the ES, which of course is the impact results realistically. We did write about this in the PIR, and the applicant did increase some of those levels and did recognise that they met us partway. But I think ultimately we feel that they're not quite right. As stated in the written rep that we made, TFA disagrees with the assessments on magnitude and sensitivity and ultimately the conclusions on those predicted impacts. We have been through that a lot of times. It does get pretty foggy, especially with 20 fishermen trying to understand different tables and how they're trying to come up with an equation that tells you you're not going to be impacted. And I know that's not easy for the applicant either, but it's even harder from a fishing perspective, I would say. We understand this has to be done at fleet level, but the inshore fleet is very small now and very finely balanced. So to consistently get results of minor adverse and low minor and negligible adverse for construction is not felt to represent the impact that's going to be felt by those vessels. In the coexistence plan, it states that sensitivity takes into account operational range and method versatility, along with dependence of a particular fishery. The table used to score that sensitivity is negligible to high. TFA commented originally on the sensitivity scores in the PIR. As we said, they did adjust, and UK potters and netters are now a medium sensitivity, but TFA would maintain that potters, at the very least, should register high on the sensitivity scale. The definition of high is low spatial adaptability due to limited operational range and the ability to deploy more than one gear type, limited spatial tolerance due to dependence on a single fishing ground, low recoverability due to inability to mitigate loss of fishing area by operating in alternative areas. We would suggest that every area that can be lobster and crab potted is being lobster and crab potted. Vessel adaptability to use alternative methods does not cover this. We have the number of potters that we have in Ramsgate because that's realistically what those grounds will support. So we feel that the potters, the lobster and crab potters in particular, meet that high criteria quite easily. Similarly, the description of magnitude is primarily a function of a fleet's dependence on the area of proposed development. The table, again, taking the potters separately, both key potting areas lay within or very close to the red line boundary. Potters should register high on both sensitivity and magnitude tables, but have only managed to achieve ultimately a low score on the magnitude table. And the other conclusions for netters and trawlers, we have put various concerns into the written representation about the levels of impact that are there. We also feel it's important to recognise the impact of displacement and how that will affect the whole fleet, as we said before. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think what we're really hoping and asking for is that these impacts are revisited, and perhaps after the two individual representations, there'll be a little bit more clarity on how important this ground is to these boats. So that's really what TFA's position is with the inspector, is to say we feel that we know that the applicant has done a lot of work on this, but we still feel like those levels are far too low. Mm-hmm. And ultimately those levels will feed into whatever happens in the future to look at disruption or commercial agreements, however you want to look at it, or any form of mitigation, will be fed by this process.
Okay. I mean, that takes me to the kind of crux of this, which is essentially to say that obviously views on the particular assessed levels and whether those are appropriate are ones that we can, of course, take into account in terms of consideration of the planning balance in relation to the project overall, and that essentially adds up in terms of the consideration of whether the project ought be recommended to proceed or not. And then, if the project is recommended to proceed, the matters raised again bear on our consideration of the appropriateness of the mitigation offer. In that respect, I wanted to kind of cut to the chase and say, what are you asking for in that respect that is not currently on the table, that is relevant to planning?
I think what TFA is really asking for is for the recognition that the impacts, certainly on certain levels for potters and drifters, are higher than is written in the ES. And that's something we did put forward in the original comments in PIR, so it's not a new thing. We've discussed the same things, and I know that we've had these conversations with the applicant, and the applicant has shifted partly, but I think there is still a lot of concern from the fishing industry. If you see a list at 9.14 that says impact, low, minor, negligible, low, minor, low, adverse, it's very difficult to inner room a fisherman to try and justify that.
Yes.
When it will have an impact. Part of that also is the loss of ground and how a loss of ground is assessed. And we have pointed that out a number of times in the written rep, which is, and again, I think we're teetering on policy a little bit, but the difference between a temporary and a permanent loss of ground. So the ES recognises temporary loss of ground, and after construction, then fishing can return. But TFA maintains that for some methods, and even for the methods that can return, there is a permanent loss of ground. The footprint of a monopile plus a safety zone can no longer be fished in. So every footprint is therefore a permanent loss of ground. Mm. If a drift, which will be a little clearer with the Defiant, if a drift unfortunately has a monopile anywhere within that drift, the entire drift is lost. Therefore, that is a permanent loss of ground. So we are really looking for acceptance that there is a permanent loss of ground, because of course the continuing impact of that impacts everyone economically and specifically the boats who are there. And we've not managed to achieve that, because we always end up back at a point which is classed as a temporary loss of ground. So it's another point that leads back to the same thing, really, which is the assessment of how this project could potentially impact these fishermen.
Yeah.
Could I just come in on, have you assessed that loss of ground, that permanent loss you just talked about, so each turbine and its safety zone, have you added that up to, and do you have a figure for what that equates to?
We have, but I've got to be honest, just fishing background. From our perspective, comes out about 9,000 square metres okay. with the safety zone
okay.
per turbine. So, and of course, the current indicative layout will affect some fishermen one way. If the layout changes,
it'll affect different
fishermen. It'll affect different fishermen in a different way. Because the ground around that extension is used in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, Solar Star will show that there's a particular area that's potted, it's quite significant. We have another potter on the northwest corner. We have drifters in the southeast corner, static gear in the southwest and the south. So all of which is within the technical paper.
Mm.
But how that ground is measured as an impact.
Mm. Is and hence the distribution of losses.
Yes, yes. It's difficult to quantify. So I think at this point, what we're asking is just for the recognition. There's no discussion about how it's going to be done. But I think the concern is that if the impacts are not correct, and if the criteria of how loss of ground is arrived at is not correct, then it's going to be very hard to come up with an agreement on how to move forward. Because at the moment, we don't necessarily agree on the criteria.
Okay. Right. Did you have a follow-up question on that?
You've mentioned a couple of times now the prospect of commercial agreements as a form of mitigation for the loss of ground. I just wanted to clarify, is there any commercial agreement in the planning at the moment?
No, there's no. We've had no discussions regarding commercial agreements.
Oh. Yeah.
TFA has brokered numerous agreements with wind farm developers and interconnectors over the last 10 years, 15 years. So it's not uncommon for the Fishermen's Association to have to do that.
Mm.
But the feeling with an extension is the fishermen feel that this is actually quite a different place now. The original Thanet wind farm, when it was constructed, there was very little consultation. And so the agreement, the fishing industry is very much on the back foot. And it's one of the reasons why there is concern now that the impacts are recognised fully, so that it seems like a fairer playing field going forward. But no, there have been no discussions, and we have not broached any discussions about disruption agreements of any sort.
However, the mere fact that you have attended this hearing tonight and you've raised the concept of them means that you are placing on record that you have an interest in holding such a conversation with the applicant. I think, in fairness, before we end this, then we will return to the applicant and we'll ask for the applicant's submission about, in principle, their view as to their ability to and the necessity for such an agreement or set of agreements.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we had actually not contemplated going forward at that point at the moment because, as we say, the layout theoretically is indicative.
Mm. Yeah.
The potential changes that may or may not occur will then also have an impact on that.
But so my rationale for saying that we need to hear from the applicant on that at some point before the closure of the examination is that if it is your view that there are adverse effects that haven't been sufficiently expressed in the ES, there's an argument in a sense then to be had about whether the ES is correct or your view of the world is correct. How that then plays out is that if it is your view that there is then the possibility of some better commercial value of the adverse impact and entry into a commercial agreement or agreements that aim to mitigate that impact, then I guess a starting proposition from us would be that if you want those matters to be reported to the Secretary of State and taken account of in the planning balance, then as close as we can get to clarity about their relevance and feasibility, the better, because we would actually need to give the Secretary of State a view as to whether an agreement or agreements are reasonably feasible things relevant to assessed impacts that require mitigation.
I think we would agree with that. The I think we would probably also say that we anticipated it would probably take quite a lot more work.
Yes.
To look at that before actually arriving at the kind of end result. It's more about the mitigation in between, and seeing how that's going to play out. And I think it's an ongoing discussion. I would say between TFA and the applicant.
Okay. Now, are there other points that you need to add in your general response on item three,
no,
or is that's the full piece? Sir, quick hand in the corner there.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick. Tom Brown, just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. I was the FLO for the construction of the first site on behalf of the fishermen local. When this project takes off, we would like to see the TFA involved with the appointment of the FLO.
Yep.
And indeed, I would like to suggest Mr. Jackson. Thank you.
Well, you're probably going to matters of detail far beyond our remit, because all we're able to do is advise the Secretary of State about whether it ought to happen and on what terms. However, what I am going to do before we go to agenda item four and the individual submissions is I'm going to revert to the applicant. You've heard the story there. I think it's you know, the position is reasonably clear. So if you can respond to it.
Thank you, sir. Jennifer Holger, on behalf of the applicant. Just a couple of short points in response. I think the first point on permanent loss from an operational perspective, we have assessed that, and we do acknowledge that there is permanent loss within the array, and that results in potentially moderate significant effect. So we have identified that as part of the application, and in fact, we've been nuanced about it as much as we possibly can, because overall, as you talked about before with dispersal of effects, it was minor adverse for the UK static netters, but we have tried to consider what would happen if there was loss within the array, and that is the point, if there is loss. As acknowledged by those in discussion, we don't quite know at the moment. That's some of the issue with this type of mitigation and this type of proposal that's before us. We consider the ES is entirely robust and fit for purpose. We could spend some time talking about that this evening. I'm not proposing to do that, sir, unless you want us to go into the specifics of the assessment. We have responded to that previously in the relevant representations. As the TFA also rightly acknowledged, this is not new ground for anybody. We've discussed this at length before. But of course, if further responses are needed on that we are happy to give it. The mitigation that currently exists is through the coexistence plan.
Yeah.
That has in it various commitments, one of which is the VAT and FOR commit to comply with the flow guidelines. As a result of that, that will have within it a number of potential mitigation measures, of which you may be aware, and that includes a whole raft, including potentially compensatory or commercial measures. And that is something which may or may not happen. But what the coexistence plan is doing is allowing for different measures to come forward and to take place through liaison, which is ongoing with the TFA, to ensure that it responds to what is happening. So from our perspective, we consider that absolutely does the job, and certainly it is secured in the DCO.
Yep.
As well, that we will comply with that. And as you will also know, sir, there are many DCOs that don't go as far as this, and we've certainly feel that we've got a good document here that actually does respond to some of these points.
Indeed. I think an observation that I would make on the kind of distance that is travelled by the draft order in this particular case is that, yes, it does go further than a number. However, I think just from our own observations on unaccompanied site inspections, clearly the geography here is rather different from the geography of a number of other locations. I mean, I've been dealing with far offshore wind farms where essentially the sub 10 metre high density locally based fishing fleet is not a relevant consideration, and so that on those sorts of scale of projects, the interaction with the fishing community is of a very different nature. Small numbers of visits by very large specialist vessels being the main consideration, and then of course some of the other closer inshore schemes where there, for whatever reason, has not been the thriving or indeed active fishing community to the extent that there is here. So I think that, you know, these are always dealt with on their own circumstances, and that the matter for us then to consider is the degree to which the particular responses that you've provided, which are, you know, on their face, responsive to the issues that the Thanet fishermen have raised, are a fair and proportionate response. We're not going to achieve an answer to that tonight, but we are very conscious of the concerns that the fishermen have raised, and we're conscious that you believe you've also put out, at least in principle, a fair response. I think what we're going to have to do is some internal deliberation and then come back in the next round of hearings, if needs be, to ask for additional information to support our thought process about this. But you know, you have been clear about where you're going, and I think the clarification that, amongst other things, if necessary, commercial agreements are under consideration is welcome. The question, I guess, that will remain in the minds of the fishing community will be what level of confidence can they have that particular element of concern will translate into something that's capable of being executed as an agreement. We don't yet have a view formally about whether it needs to be, but we're going to have to consider that.
So, Jennifer Holgate, that's entirely noted, and we'll wait to hear on your deliberations and we can consider it further.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's fair... Merlin Jackson. I think it's fair to say that that's one of the reasons we hadn't perhaps been thinking forward as far as commercial agreements or any detail, was because the liaison and coexistence plan has begun to adapt and take on things that TFA has suggested. So mitigation-wise, the bottom drift survey that the applicant has agreed to is a big deal for the fishermen. And that will lead into informing any form of agreement that has to go forward in the future. So we respect that that's been added, and we have made some suggestions for other things that could go into the coexistence, other mitigation measures, trawling, the possibility of looking at where tows are, which will also be things that are dependent on where a monopile gets placed. So there are things in there that we know we're going to be working through with the applicant, but you're absolutely right. It's the level of confidence that the fishermen feel will be there in the future going forward for any form of agreement, and that is a concern at the moment. So, but yeah, we're quite happy with exactly what you just said.
Okay, and then one final point that I will just test with the applicant is again that the question about the outstanding disagreement around ES impact level assessments, because, you know, clearly it feels as though you've kind of got to here, this community have kind of got to here, but you're not quite there, and whether there is any acknowledgement on behalf of the applicant that there is scope for movement, or whether you believe that you are absolutely 100% on point across all relevant assessments in the ES as they currently stand.
Jennifer Holgan, half the applicant, it's probably fair I defer to the experts on this point to give their view rather than mine.
Sara Shigwanova on behalf of the applicant. In relation to the outcomes of the assessment, we would like to note that in the particular case of drift netting, there is a recognition that there may be potential for some individual vessels to be significantly affected where their grounds overlap with the wind farm array. So that's in the assessment, and that's been recognized. And then there is the physics liaison coexisting plan with procedures to deal with that issue. During construction, we do feel that the loss of grounds would be short-term, temporary, and therefore we don't feel there is a significant impact. And in that context, we also would like to note that exclusion during construction would be limited to the areas where safety zones are in place at a given time, not to the entirety of the site. So the localized areas where exclusion may apply during a short time.
And all of those things are noted, but then again, for an individual vessel with a clear and regular association with a particular sea area, with a particular ground, albeit that a construction period in the life of a major project, and for people working on major projects, feels like a very short period of time indeed. In the economic life of a small fishing vessel, it might be enough time to create a lot of damage. Is that something that you've taken into account in reaching the assessment that you have?
Yes, I think we have. In the particular case of drift netting, and we can look at the data in Sackfish if that's helpful, and to the grounds that have been provided during consultation, but the degree of overlap is very small. There are a few areas where there is overlap, but it's small, and therefore, and the proportional disturbance to those areas during construction would be also be very small. In relation to other methods, porting, from the information we have gathered during consultation, including grounds depicted by fishermen, in addition to Sackfish data, the extent of the grounds, it is larger than that of drift netting within the wind farm array and the area around, and we do feel that on the basis that the of the short-term and localized exclusion, the impact is of no is not significant in this instance.
Okay. Well, clearly there's not going to be a meeting of minds tonight. we will have to turn our minds to that further and see if those are matters that we can usefully deliberate upon. You know, it is not unheard of, on consideration of the balance of evidence, for an examining authority to form views about whether a particular assessment of impact in an environmental statement is justified with respect to the evidence. If we are being specifically requested to make such an observation and either find that, yes, the ES is sound, or that in this particular respect, for particular reasons, no, the ES is not sound, then clearly that's something that we can turn our mind to in the report. But I think the best thing to do here will be to take a monitoring view on this, come back to the applicant in April, and ask whether these matters have moved any closer to agreement. We will see, no doubt, a concluded statement of common ground at the final deadline before the end of the examination, and if it turns out that it is still in dispute, then we will note that and we will consider the point in the report. I think that's probably as fair as I can say.
Jennifer Holgate, yes, sir, that is all fair. And you know, as we've been saying throughout, we will continue dialogue with the TFA, as we've been doing already, and we will continue those discussions with a view to narrowing the statement of common ground, which is pretty narrowed, but there's still areas we want to discuss. So,
okay, well, shall we then move on to agenda item 4 and individual positions from individual fishermen? So, gentlemen, Mr. Lowe, Mr. Pullman, who's going first? Mr. Lowe.
That'd be Mr. Lowe, skipper owner of the Solar Star. I find it very difficult to agree anywhere with their impact assessments, because if you're putting a monopile in an area that's been potted, you've either got to renew the pots or take them away, because you're just going to implode on them. So it would mean a total removal of all my fishing gear from the area indicated on this indicative chart. And there's nowhere else to go, basically. If there was, I would be there. I've fished this area for the past 34 years. Previously, I used smaller pots, and I used to bring them in October and redeploy in April. The last 12 years, though, I fished this ground 12 months of the year. I got a government grant for specialist pots for this particular ground. They're wider and lower and heavier, so they're not affected by the wind and tide, which you get on the Drillstone's bank. There is nowhere else to put those pots, because the ground has gone. It's been fished by the fishermen. If you could put up my suckerfish data, which you'll see on the chart there, they're my track lines from Ramsgate to my main potting area up in the northeast corner. That's it, basically. If you looked at every month, it would be there. So I'm impacted very heavily.
Can I ask for a screenshot of that?
I wish. I wish I was able to give you a screenshot of that. The suckerfish, the agreement with the suckerfish system, is that each fisherman can only see his individual data.
Ah, so it's commercially and confidential.
They have made an agreement with Vattenfall that Vattenfall can see the data for the purposes of this project. Mm. And I have a letter from every fisherman to say that I can see the data from every fisherman for this project. But I can't work out how to take a screenshot. So
I can.
If you want to. I mean, that's why we've shown these particular vessels in just 1 month, because the fishermen are here who are happy to show this data.
Yeah. So if I mean, essentially what I was hoping we could get to was a point where these could come into the examination as individual documents so that we can formally and officially refer to them, whereas if they can't, interesting though they are, we can't look back at them. I mean, in terms of the technical side of taking a screenshot, it is a case of Control-Alt-Print-Screen.
I think if
the vessel owners are content,
then
if that could be done and those could then be provided at the next deadline, with just a file name that makes clear which particular vessel and owner they relate to.
One of the other reasons is that the vessels wanted anonymity, so hence in the technical report the vessels are represented by colour rather than as individual vessels.
Okay.
And the reason for that was data has often been used the wrong way for TFA fishermen, and there was some resistance. So it was difficult to get fishermen to agree to suckerfish, and the caveat for that was that it was very tightly controlled. But as I say, this data is part of the chart that is already within the. It's obviously just the solar stars. Part of that particular month, which is May 17, is just his data. So it's data that's already in the technical report. It's just that it's specific to one boat and it's named.
Yeah.
And so if the skipper is happy, then.
Okay. Now I just want to. Yes. I mean, my colleague, Mr. Bradley, is just drawing up the figure 322. Now, which document is?
Now that's in the appendix, isn't it? I think I haven't got the rep number up on the screen.
Annex 9.1.
Thank you.
Excellent. Which demonstrates anonymized vessel tracks in May 2017 from suckerfish trackers, that in terms of the generalized picture of effect, It's not quite as stark as yours, sir, because a number of the track vessels are going through but to slightly beyond the proposed red line boundary, whereas yours are confined within it. But if you have concerns about this data emerging into the public domain, I mean, we've seen it, and there is a similar picture in that figure.
One of the key differences between this particular picture and the picture that is in the technical paper is that the yellow dots, which you can expand out, are gear markers.
Yeah.
Which are not shown in the large
so
picture.
So essentially here what we're seeing is a much clearer individual impact statement, because we are seeing the physical location of the gear within the red line boundary as distinct from what we're seeing on figure 3.22, which is essentially just the passage of the vessels.
Yes, I mean the figure in the technical report does show the same thing. It does show, if you zoom right in on it, you can see that the vessels' movements are such that they're shooting and hauling. So you can see that there's gear being used within there. But this is perhaps clearer because it has the gear positions on it.
Mm. There is, of course, as well, a GDPR consideration in relation to this form of data, because it is, I think this is data that is potentially subject to that regulation in terms of it being personal data of an individual. Can I just test the applicant's view about, I guess, mechanisms of bringing this in, whether there would be any grave concern if it were to be brought in, but that any publication of it on the website would be redacted in terms of any reference to an individual interested party and anonymised.
So, Jennifer Holgate, I think that would be a potentially appropriate way to proceed in relation to the point on data from my perspective, and from the team's perspective, we don't have an issue with that being published in that way.
Okay. So that's an offer to you, Mr. Lowe, that if we can receive a screenshot of this, that what would go into the public domain would merely be a picture of it. It wouldn't mention you. It wouldn't be associated with you as an interested party or as a fisherman. It would just be a picture, some dots on a screen that for most members of the public would probably not mean very much, but we would have it available, and indeed so would the applicant, and we would know the point that you were making.
Yes, that would be fine, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that consideration.
Well, can I just ask, just for clarity, if all we're going to get is a screenshot, is about, you may have already touched on this, but what time period this covers, if you can say what the dates were.
Yes, this covers May 2017. Suckerfish will only allow 1 month's data at a time to be shown.
Okay.
So we can't do more than a month. That's it.
Okay.
I mean, can I further enlarge on this? when they had the survey period for the proposed extension site, we tried to work by working in blocks where the survey was taking place. We could work in this block and they were surveyed there. That became unworkable, and I had to move all of those positions, all of those pots had to come out of the site for about a 6-week period. Vattenfall recognised this, and we came to a commercial agreement. So they are aware of the complications of the gear on the ground.
Yeah.
When the site was built, it was the same. We had to vacate the site while the proposed, or while the initial site went in. Mm. And I can't see being able to work in blocks while they construct the site, because at certain times of the vessel can't be in that position, or the weather stops it working. If I've got the gear deployed on the ground and the weather sets in bad, I can't suddenly pop out there and
race
move
out
it.
There, yeah.
It takes me a week to put that much gear on the ground. That's 7 working days, because I can only carry X amount of pots on the boat. And if that was interrupted by bad weather, it could take me 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe, to move the gear.
Okay.
They're quite large, the pots, and they're heavy. It
would
be very difficult. Thank you.
Do we have then an agreement that we'll get a screenshot of this, that we note now the date and duration, but that we agree that what will be published will not mention the name of either a person or a vessel? Okay. Thank you very much.
Sorry, one further point. I should think the vast majority of my or the boat's takings income comes from this grant.
Okay.
It has done. I used to have 2 crew, so we used to work 3-handed. But with the quota restrictions and fishing pattern changes, 1 crew left, then the last one. For the past 8 years, I've been on my own. So I've tailored my potting to this one's bit of ground, which I've been there for 34 years. I still work the same number of pots as I did initially, and I work across the ground, and then I revert back. So I'm working a piece of ground, and the catch rates have stayed the same for the past 20 years. So it's sustainable, and it's a good sustainable fishery, and it would be a shame to lose it.
But all those points.
Further on, once the site is built, it is able to be fished. Obviously, you lose the footprint, which is around 9,000 square metres per turbine. But with their greater distance apart, it would be fishable again.
Mm. And noting that some of your gear there is within the existing array, and presumably that's...
That is, yeah. Yeah, we've
feasible for
there's
you.
There's little patches of rough ground. It's not all over. It's just a patch, sometimes 3-4 times the size of this room. But it's enough to put a string of pots on for a week, and then you leave it alone for a year and then go back the following year.
Mm.
It's the way it goes. Farmed almost. Except we're not planting anything, we're just taking it out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Pullman, do you want to take us through your position?
Yep, it's Graham Pullman, TFA. There's my tracks up coming up now. I'm drift fishing, so it's bottom drifting, so it's not the same as John at all. But with the gear covers probably 3 miles from where I shoot it comes across down through the tide. It's a one-off set of gear, or sets of gear. It's the only gear anyone's got in Ramsgate. It's the tide what runs through that outside edge. You're talking 3 knots of tide, 4 knots of tide, so you need heavy gear. Mine's all nylon, so I get it lasts probably 2 years. I can get out of it, maybe a fraction longer each fleet, depending on how hard it's worked and the ground. If I lost the ground, I've got to start again. All new gear, lighter gear. You only get 12 months out of the light gear, maybe 14 months, and you have to renew it all again. But it's the same as John. It's the only bit of ground I work. Probably 90% of my earnings come from there. And it's say one turbine. At the moment on the chart, there's one turbine in the way. If there was, that's finished that bit of ground off, because you can't just shoot the gear and say, well, it's going to go down and miss it. You get an idea where these are going to go, but if you've got the tide slightly wrong, the direction of the wind can change the tide a fraction, and it can be, it does, it still do the same different distance, 2-3 miles, but at the finishing point, it could be a little bit further west, or it can be a little bit further east. So you know where it's going to be, but not that precise that you're going to miss a turbine. I wouldn't like to chance it. And if you're hauling one fleet, I've got 4 or 5 fleets in the water, but you're hauling one fleet and we've got to get down and get that one a bit sharpish, or it's going to get the turbine, or it's gone too far. It's just unworkable. I would have to, well, it would be the end of it for for fishing there. I don't, and then I'm going to be pushed off to somewhere else and displace someone or open up new ground, which if you've got brand new gear on the boat and you're going to try and break in a new bit of ground, it's madness, because you want older gear, break the new ground in, and then go and put the new gear in, not go and destroy brand new nets, because it's not all the ground's clear, it's not the same. I mean, that's the only place you drift there. Everyone drifts further off the other side of the farm, up to the northeast of it. You can't drift anywhere west of it. It's all hard ground. It's all static fishing. That's basically it, really. Yeah.
So the effect,
it would just destroy me. To the point of where I wouldn't know really whether to carry on or not. It's quite concerning.
Indeed. And so therefore you're suggesting that the effect of the construction of this array, if it is constructed, would be a total displacement of your particular operation.
Totally. It wouldn't be minor or down on the rector scale down here somewhere. It's up the top for me.
Yeah. And have you had conversations with the applicant about the potential again for a commercial agreement?
I'll just go through T3 Thanet Fishermen's Association. I don't do nothing on my own.
Yeah.
It's all gone through Merlin.
Okay.
Yeah, if I could just say this is one of the reasons that TFA was very keen to get the bottom drift surveys into position, because I think we were less clear on the indicative layout a good few months ago. And so where fishermen have drifts, we asked the applicant to agree to pre and post construction surveys undertaken by these fishermen to show that they can fish this ground without fastening. The indicative layout now, of course, now the fishermen have seen the indicative layout, suggests that this drift in particular is going to be a serious problem. The drifts to the north would, again, depend on those bottom drift surveys. But the reason that Graham came for the netters is because his is quite clear, and John for the potters similarly. They're just two kind of examples of key people who are who definitely have a very serious concern. There's another potter to the northwest who would be similarly affected, perhaps not as quite as much as John, because he spreads a little further. But the ground that is in the potting ground that is in the technical report is correct. The distribution of that ground is correct, because that was fed into by John, Solar Star, and by the other potters. But actually those pieces of ground are quite small, and the only person on that northeastern piece, for example, is the Solar Star.
Yeah.
So it's everything's in quite a fine balance all around the site and the areas that they work. And it was just trying to show that, you know, that as individuals, some of those impacts are going to be very, very high.
Okay.
Can I just say one thing, sir, about John Nichols, Fennet Fishermen's Association. The importance of that ground to the bottom drifters has always been for Dover Sole. They've struggled over the last year or two with the fishery in that area, mainly because of the electric pulse beaming that's gone on by the Dutch fleet on the 12-mile limit just outside the farm there. That's to be phased out over a period now in the next few years, and that ground will become more and more productive if it were allowed to be fished in around the site now, not so much in the site, but that particular piece of ground and where the drifters work outside the site as well. Mm. So once again, the ground is going to become more and more valuable as time goes on.
Okay. Now, drawing this together, there's one final, I guess, confidential data point that I think we need to cross. Having said that we could take this in anonymized, there is, of course, the possibility of a member of the public listening to this audio, putting two and two together. Because, you know, this is, as you said, commercially sensitive data and also data that you are subject to an agreement on in terms of disclosure, but yet your names are known and the names of the boats are known and could be recovered from the audio record. On balance, giving consideration to that, I thought that I should draw that to both of your attention, and if that influences your consideration about whether you're prepared to put this material in, those are considerations for you. If you would rather not to in those circumstances, again, I would fully understand that. We have, when all said and done, seen it, but of course, without it on the record, it will be impossible to refer to it as an individual data source.
Can I come in on that, please? For myself, and I think I speak for Graham, we have no concerns about that going to the public domain.
Okay. Thank you. Well, on that basis, I think to keep the potential concerns that you've raised reduced, I think it would still be sensible that it came in on an anonymised basis, and as the parties here are fully agreeable to that and we're agreeable to that, then let's have it in anonymised. But, you know, we can't exclude the possibility that somebody who really, really, really wanted to find out your names and what you're up to would be able to put two and two together. As long as you're content, then that's the base on which we'll proceed. So can screenshots of these be taken and provided to us at deadline 3? When they're provided to us, it would assist if we just had the description of which of you each shot relates to. I'm sure we'll remember, but it would help us. But of course, that won't be included in what is published. That will be redacted. Is there anything else that you, either of you individually, need to add?
Jay Lowe here, Hamlet Fisherman's. Also, the tracks there from Ramsgate to the sites show the crossings of the inshore zones. And if the potential sea lanes were congested, it's just an indication of how busy it does get there.
Yes, indeed.
And if you're on single-handed working and you're out on deck,
yep,
there's a possibility of
a safety issue. Well, that's another. You're kind of giving a specific that underlies that general safety point, and indeed, that's a general point that arises from the anonymised sucker fish data that we already have access to. Okay, I think we need to draw this to a conclusion. I will ask the applicant if there are any observations that the applicant wish to make on those two individual submissions.
Jennifer Holgate, on behalf of the applicant. No, sir, we have no further comments to make.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, in which case, gentlemen, I would like to thank you on behalf of the panel for attending this evening and providing us liberally with your time and information. I think we know, turning finally to the agenda, what has been asked to be done. So the issues and actions arising are clear, and the next steps are clear. So if you are content, gentlemen, I will bring this hearing to a close.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.